Hello and welcome to Two Old Guys on the Back Porch. I am Steve Scotch, and we have the lovely and talented Kat at C-A-T, making all the little boys cry. Kat, what's going on?
Hey, how y'all doing? We can be found on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all your other premier podcast platforms. We also be found on Facebook and Instagram. We're just a little 30-minute podcast every week. We just try and stick to the topic, no talking about cappuccinos and stupid stuff like that. Our two shout-outs today are here in the United States. One is Holland, New York. Holland derived its name from the Holland Land Company. Originally, the original title holder of the land in Western New York. Of course, they have a famous Holland Tulip Festival every year, second weekend of May. And our other town is Eau Claire, Wisconsin. After the Civil War, Wisconsin's lumber industry expanded rapidly, and Eau Claire's nickname was Sawdust City for its large amounts of sawmills. They had 75 sawmills and factories making everything from furniture to electric motors in 1890. Giving y'all a round of applause.
What did Wisconsin have to do with the Civil War?
It was about the town after the Civil War, what happened.
Oh, okay.
It became a big lumber town.
All right. Alcohol is stacked up here on the back porch. And I've heard that alcohol kills brain cells slowly. But that's never really bothered me because I'm not in a hurry anyway. Today I'm having the pre-mixed old-fashioned from Knob Creek. And it's pretty good. I'm going to keep trying some of these pre-mixed cocktails in a bottle. Got them at the liquor store. The distilleries are putting them out. It's, you know, they're good on a lazy night. And you don't want to, like, mix one up. Kat, what you got?
It's getting warmer outside. And one of my favorite fruits is strawberry. So I made myself a strawberry mojito.
Ooh.
With the Bacardi Dragonberry and strawberry.
Looks like it should be called a
rum.
Bloody something.
No, it's just the strawberries are smashed to death. Muddled,
gotcha.
Muddled beyond belief.
All right. Sounds sweet like you, babe.
Thanks, doll.
All right, today we're going to bring up a subject that probably most of you have never heard of. It's called TNR.
We had never heard of it until 6 months ago we started doing it.
TNR stands for Trap, Neuter, and Return. And this is a process, it's not used on humans, not yet, but in some cases maybe it should be. TNR, you trap, neuter, return. It's a process where people who care set live traps, catch feral cats, have them spayed or neutered, and then you return them to the area where they were caught. And, you know, it sounds simple, but there's more to it than that. Okay, here's a little background how we got up in it. The office where I started working a couple years ago, we had like five or six feral cats. And the awesome lady who worked this job before me, she would feed them. She'd been feeding them for years. So I just continued the tradition there of feeding the feral cats. And then I noticed we went from five or six to like 12. Okay. So the feral colony at the office was getting out of control, which I think it does seem to happen more than not. Feral cat colonies kind of getting out of control. So the wifey here, she stepped up, bought a live trap, and started catching these wild cats.
I didn't really know what I was doing when I started. I mean, we were trying to find somebody to help us do something, help out these cats, because they were obviously were making more and more.
We tried to get somebody to come trap them.
Right.
Because there's a lot of groups around here, probably everywhere, that are trying to you know, control this problem, which we didn't know was a problem until we got into it.
Right. And, you know, you sit there and you think, well, why would you do that? Well, because we're trying to control the amount of cats in that colony. Because, I mean, if you have, let's see, a live feral female, they can have...
What, 3 litters a year?
They can have 5 or 6 litters a year. Yeah. So, and then by the time you have one unaltered female cat, can produce 200 kittens over a lifetime. And it's just unreal. And the bad part about the kittens is, of course, they're outdoor kittens born outdoors. Most of them only have 25%
mortality rate.
The rest of them don't make it because they're outside. And if a cat, you know, survives past 6 months, it's good, you know, for the cat, but have less competition. And the whole mating cycle of cats and tomcats and pussies are not, it's not a great scene either, because it's kind of violent, because once the cat goes into heat, all the other toms from like 5 miles around all show up to take part. Anyway, we've been doing it, and it's been interesting, because we've kind of gotten to know some of the cats, and some of the cats we had never seen before, because there was another part of the colony that really didn't show up for the feedings or anything. And, you know, different groups do it. One group we're working with is Operation Catnip of Richmond. They have usually a clinic once a month. And so far this year, they have fixed, spayed, neutered 292 feral cats. And that's quite
good. That's just one place right down the road from here.
Right.
Cat said volunteer vets show up once a month. It's free. Cat's hooked up with them now, Facebooking, Instagramming, texting and stuff. And, you know, it's free, but Cat does throw a couple 20s in the bucket because they're volunteering their time
right.
to do it.
And the other organization, Kinchlow South, they have clinics like 3 days a week. And there's one day of the week on Thursday, try and dedicate to people like me trying to fix feral cats. And they, of course, you pay $40 for fixing each cat, but it makes it easier to try and get an appointment. There are other appointment places in town here where you've got to get in line to call to make the appointment for a month ahead in order to get into this low-cost clinic, which it's kind of a, you know, with trapping these cats, you don't always know if you're going to get a cat or not. Because sometimes, like this week, I did my darndest to try and get... We've only got like four adult cats left in this colony.
Cats caught 9 so far,
right.
Which has been great. I mean, it's been... had a little luck on our side, for sure. But there is a couple left that we need to get. And it's just going to take some time, but she's doing great.
And some people think, you know, once you got this cat, you can turn it... to not be feral anymore. No, you can't. If you can get a kitten maybe between the ages of 3 months and 6 months, and it's independent from its mother already, maybe you can change that cat into be not feral anymore. But most adult feral cats are going to stay feral.
Yeah, that's a good point. Some of you listening probably thinking, well, you caught it. You know, you did a good thing. You got it fixed. And why would you take it and return it outside? If you don't know about these things, and Kat grew up on a farm, she knows all about barn cats and feral cats and stuff. These jerkers are high strung, okay? You're not going to just open the cage and let this thing out in your dining room, okay? It's going to go batshit crazy, and they can't help it. That's their nature. That's the way they are, so you have to return them. Now, one thing I have noticed, the ones at the office that Kat has caught and got fixed, they do clip their ear. It's usually
right.
If you're looking at them, it's the ear on the right. I'm going to take this dog and whip his butt. Okay. That's the noise in the background. All right. So they clip their ear. So I know which ones we've caught. And they do seem to be a little less wild.
Right.
After.
And I don't know if that's
they've been
some
caught.
Of the males because we've cut their balls off or not, but. Anyway, matter of fact, we had one that did get loose, in our garage. And what I was saying, we did have one cat that did get loose out of the cage.
Your fault.
And my fault. I was trying to feed it, and it was a kitten, and it like squeezed its way, you know.
Bum rushed the door.
Bum rushed
out.
The door as I've been trying to feed it, and it bum rushed on.
Destroyed my garage. Everything I had in the garage was on the floor. And this thing was like a 4-pound, what, a year old, one even a year old.
It wasn't even 4 months old.
And it train wrecked my entire garage. Cat still got a scar on her arm from trying to grab this thing. We had to call animal protection. I'm not kidding. We had to get animal control. The thing bunkered down inside my riding lawnmower. And we had to get professionals over here. Are we trying to trap cats, get them fixed, and return them? And this one little joker, and it still comes to my window at the office every day and stares a hole at me.
I've been in your garage, man. I've seen your dog. I've been in your motor.
The animal control people were cool as shit. They came here, threw this net thing, baggy over it, got it. We got it back in the trap, got it fixed, and returned it. But that was quite an ordeal.
I don't know. There's groups like PETA that don't think TNR programs are cruel for banning the felines in the wild. I'm sorry. The truth is, for a feral cat, their lifespan's usually between 2 and 8 years, okay? They're not going to be your 20-year-old cat you had to go put to sleep because it just lived too long. Anyway. I love doing it. I love seeing the cats, you know.
After it's done, surviving,
you know, living a good life.
They give them shots, check them for ticks and fleas and stuff. They're really cool over there where Cat takes them. And, you know, catching these cats to get them fixed, Cat will tell you it's no easy feat, okay? No. Once she catches it, then she has to, you got to cover the trap. The back porch has gotten out of control. Once you catch one, you have to cover the trap because they go a little bit cuckoo, right, Cat?
It's cuckoo because they're trying to get out, and that's the natural.
But once you cover it, they chill out.
Right.
And like Cat said, you got to, there's an appointment thing involved. If other people out there have ever dealt with this, maybe you have somebody you can just call and go take it there. Around here, it's a little bit of an issue with the appointment and all that shit, other than the cool people that show up for free once a month down the road. But usually, you know, you take it home if you caught it that day, that afternoon. And we have, you know, we're lucky. We have a garage. If it's cold, I know we sound like little animal freak bitches or whatever, but we got a little space heater out there, and we don't put them right down on the concrete. Cat's got a whole little mat to put them on, and they just chill. We take them the next day. Cat does. They drops it off. Then they call her at noon or later that afternoon. She goes, picks it up, brings it back home again in the covered trap, and it's got to chill until the next day, a little bit of healing for the incision.
Right.
And then she'll take it back the next morning and let it go.
And one of the other groups I'm probably going to start working with is called Hanover Community Cats. That's what you call these cats. These cats are not, you know, alley cats or feral. They're community. They're in your community. They don't really aren't owned by anybody. People feed them all the time.
They're not mean.
No. But sometimes you'll have a colony that needs to move. Like they were talking about the other week, there was one near a storage place that wasn't going to be a storage place anymore. And then you move the cats and find a place for those cats to go. So they TNR them, fix them. And then, you know, sometimes you can go move the whole colony or part of the colony to like a barn situation, somewhere where they kind of have a job. And are, you know, getting the rats and everything for the farmer. So
yeah.
Anyway, we've enjoyed doing it. I'm hoping we're not going to have such a problem getting these last four cats.
What you've done has already helped, because if you hadn't started doing it, we'd probably have 20 cats right now.
Right.
And like Kat was talking about, PETA, most organizations involved in helping animals, they're supportive of the trap, neuter, and release process. The American Society for Prevention of the Cruelty of Animals, they're in favor. Both the Humane Society of the United States and the American Humane Association, they're both in favor of trap, neuter, and release. And like Kat said, believe it or not, PETA, you know, also known as People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, also known as a bunch of nutbags, they don't support the TNR process. I'm going to give you my own little personal take on this trap, neuter, release process. I've spent a little time in the wild. You know, sometimes I see a fox, sometimes I see a hawk. You know, I've seen a few coyotes. And my instincts are to, you know, take these predators out. But I know hawks are off the list. Don't shoot a hawk. It's illegal. But they do sloop down in their backyard and take out a bird, a dove every once in a while. But my brain kind of tells me to let nature be nature. I mean, there's a reason for predators. There's a reason for prey. There's a reason for scavengers. But in the feral cat world, I think what the wifey is doing is pretty awesome. You know, we call these cats wild or feral, but once you start leaving food out for them and water for them, hell, the feral cats at our office get Diamond Springs water. You're welcome. you know, once you start doing it and they kind of know you a little bit, they do start to trust you a little bit. You know, I've got a few, I can walk right up to them. I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to put my hand on them. They're not going to let me do that.
But I mean, he's barely even touched the house cats. He's not going to touch any feral ones.
Well, they're not going to let me.
Right.
I mean, that's why I don't reach out. But, you know, because they have the wild instinct in them that's not going to let them get but so close. But anyway, you got anything else to add?
No.
Okay. The wifey's crushing it. Okay.
And if you want to financially support any Hanover community cats, or the other group is Operation Catnip of Richmond, they're always glad to take donations.
All right. Like I said, the wifey's crushing it. She's not afraid. Okay. I'm so proud of her. You see, on this planet, you have some people who have a heart. Some people don't. And my wifey has a heart as big as the moon. When it comes to animals, she definitely has a big heart. And that's one of the reasons I love her. And let's keep on rocking, baby. We're going to roll right into One Tough Son of a Bitch. I'm sorry. It's One Tough Awesome Lady. Anna May Wong.
Right.
Born in 1905 from Los Angeles, California. Anna's real name was Wong Lu Song.
Right. Hmm. Which means, let's see, Willow Frosted Yellow.
Wow. But we'll stick with the Anna May Wong. The first Chinese-American film star in Hollywood. At age 17, I think it was, Anna played her first leading role in the movie The Toll of the Sea. Anna May Wong received rave reviews, but due to her being Chinese-American,
right,
you know, Hollywood, they didn't know what to do with her.
Right. There's a great movie that's called The Good Earth that was about being in China, okay? It was made in 1937, and she really wanted to be the lead role for the movie. But because Paul Muni, who she would be playing opposite, was Caucasian, they turned her away because they didn't want her kissing Paul Muni on camera.
Well, she was stuck in a bunch of supporting roles.
Right.
And believe it or not, in the 1920s, there were laws that enforced social segregation. No marriage, no intimate relationships, and as you said, no kissing on stage.
No kissing.
Okay, so Anna May Wong, she couldn't even do a movie scene because of this, because she was Chinese.
Right.
So it was like the late 20s. Anna May Wong told Hollywood to stick it, went over to Europe, became a star.
Right. She was fluent in French, German, also English and Chinese.
A couple years later, she came back to Hollywood, starred on Broadway, signed with Paramount Studios. She was a badass.
Yeah.
Okay. She was still getting typecast in the 30s. So she went out and did like a bunch of B movies. And she used these movies to pretty much portray Chinese Americans as professionals.
Right.
Successful.
I mean, we had a bad history in this country of they all came here to help build the railroad. And then that's all people thought was the people who built the railroad or ran a Chinese restaurant. That was about it.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to Hollywood High School and began as a photographer's model.
Hmm.
That's her how her wow. career began.
Through her films, public appearances, magazine features, she helped all Asian Americans really become accepted into, you know, mainstream America, really, at a time when there was intense racism and discrimination. Anna Mae Wong, she was also smoking hot. Let me throw it in there. She's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and that makes Anna Mae Wong one tough, awesome lady. Did we watch anything?
We watched, and you watched this with me, so you're going to help chime in on this movie. We watched The Iron Claw, which is a great movie about wrestling, about the Von Erich family, right?
They're go on. I can't wait to hear you talk about it. Go ahead.
It shows about the world of pro wrestling in the 1980s. That's pre-McMahon, where he bought all the little circuits.
Territories.
Back when we were kids, we would watch Atlantic Coast Wrestling or
wrong.
East Coast. What was it? What was the name of the
Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling?
There we go.
We had NWA. It was all, everybody had a territory.
Anyway, he was a great person to watch this movie with because he had all this insight about this wrestling
who
world.
Did?
You did.
I know my wrestling.
You know your wrestling. Anyway, it was a great movie about this family that they were all into wrestling and they were all trying to do what.
Their dad was, he had a territory. He it was in the house.
Right.
The sons were going to do it. The Von Erichs, they were big in Dallas, Texas. I think his dad might have run a school at some time. Zac Efron is the main Von Erich in this thing. And it was three brothers that wrestled. Two of them are pretty decent. They kind of dragged the other one into it. He was the one that got hurt, right?
Right.
But I couldn't believe Zac Efron. I like the dude. He's done some funny movies or whatever. I couldn't believe how bulked this dude was. I mean, when he first came on the screen, I said, this is some, I don't know, Photoshop shit or something. But evidently, my man bulked up. I could not believe it.
Anyway, it just shows apparently there was a curse with the family, or they believed that there was a curse. It was from the mother's side, right?
Von Erich was not the dad's last name.
Right.
He took that from his side of the family. I think it was his mom's maiden name or something, which
right.
evidently didn't work out because there was a little bit of history of suicide in the family and just some bad shit happened to him. Some of it their fault. Very interesting that they did that movie. I'm glad somebody pulled that story out because the Von Erichs back in the day in Texas, they owned wrestling back then.
And the best one of the best parts was we felt we were in Texas in the 1970s from the music.
Oh, the details were so on. You know, a lot of you young bucks out there, you don't know what the 70s are. But, I mean, this film, the cars, the clothes, the hair. And I know movies, they do this every day, take you back to a time. But it was a lot of, you know, me and Kat were sitting there going like, Kat was like, my mom had that on the wall in her kitchen.
Right,
I mean, it was so, the details in it were so spot on. And I'm going to tell you what, the way they portrayed the wrestling, it wasn't bad. They went against Ric Flair and some of the Harley Race and some of the big time wrestlers back in the day. And they just hired some actors to play them. Again, overall, I was shocked at how good it was. Again, I have a little bit of a history of watching wrestling, so it kind of helped me a little bit. But Kat enjoyed it. The movie's long.
It's long.
But the damn thing, it went on by.
Right.
I mean, that's usually a good sign. I'm sure Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 6. But me and Kat, we gave it like a, I don't know, B plus.
Yeah, definitely a B plus. It was a great film. We watched it on Max. I think it's coming on HBO soon. So anyway, it's a definite, you know, two thumbs up recommendation for us for The Iron Claw. You can find it on Max, or it'll probably be on HBO soon.
It's worth a night. Did we get to do a shot?
We did a shot, and I think you already drank yours.
Oh, I still got some left. What is it?
It's called the Buttery Nipple. It's supposed to be a rosy nipple, but that didn't work out. Anyway, it's butterscotch schnapps. And
I'm all about nipples.
Irish cream. You put an ounce of the butterscotch schnapps and half an ounce of the Irish cream. Get it a little cold. And
it's called what?
Buttery Nipple.
All right, down the hatch.
That was good.
I don't know. We got to change these shots up. They all starting to taste like candy and the buttery nipple.
Well, you didn't like the tequila the other week, so.
I don't know.
It's two directions you can go.
You can dupe it so many of those and go, yeah, I feel like I just ate a sugar daddy. If you don't know what that is, look it up.
Oh, shoot. They had a sugar daddy shot. Shouldn't have done that one.
All right. Shot of the week was called?
The buttery nipple.
Give it a shot. Thank you, Kat. All right. This week we were bumpered in. Band of the week. Dude of the week. Bob Seger, 78 years young from Detroit, Michigan. Bob Seger, he's a legend in Detroit. From the 70s, probably into the 80s, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. They were all over the FM radio.
Yeah, how would you call them Southern rock? I mean,
no,
you would call them rock.
I don't, just mainstream. I really
could have heard that on Iron Claw, that's for sure.
I think they did play some Seger on there. They played "Get Out of Denver," right. I believe the song we were bumpered in. I think they did. You've heard some of these songs, "Night Moves." Shit, if you watched a movie ever in the last 30 years, you probably heard "Hollywood Nights."
Right.
Down on Main Street. You know that one. I remember hearing Down on Main Street on the radio probably over and over and over. Turn the Page. Very cool song about life on the road. And how about old time rock and roll? Not the fact that me and my boys in the garage band would butcher that song back in the day, but remember Tom Cruise? Before he turned into a Scientology nut, was in Risky Business, and he slides across the wood floor in his socks and lip syncs.
Oh yeah,
old time rock and roll.
The moment.
Yes. My dad was a big Seger fan. Miss you, Dad. I remember he had this cassette. He would pop in his stereo in his 73 Ford pickup truck, and I don't know, Bob Seger. He's a classic. That's a good description. He sold more than 75 million records.
Good Lord.
So people are listening. Inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
He has stopped touring November 1st, 2019. But if you want to find an example, I guess, there's a thing going around called Hollywood Nights, the Bob Seger Experience, and it'll be there at Dr. Pepper Park there in Roanoke, Virginia, July 12th.
That is so weird you mention that, because I'm on the verge of doing a pod, well, we are, about cover bands, because for some reason I clicked on YouTube, it was a Van Halen cover band, and it was wretched, and I was like, wow, if you can't sing good covers, then don't do it. But and ever since then, on my YouTube channel, like every other day, there's another cover band. I had no freaking idea. There's a cover band for every band that's ever been on the radio.
Let's see. I took you to a Talking Heads one, a Depeche Mode, and a Cure one. The Depeche Mode and the Cure were together. Remember that?
Well, I don't know if it was a Cure cover band.
They were.
Okay. You say they were. Oh, yeah, they were. They were. Anyway, it's kind of wild. Bob Seger, again, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Songwriters. Very good songwriter. Gets neglected in that category. In the Hall of Fame for that. Very talented man. Bob Hugs and kisses. Wish you nothing but good health. Check out Bob Seger wherever you get your music. We want to thank everybody for hanging out on the back porch. And we will see y'all down the road.
See ya. The Baptist preaching Southern Funky school teacher. She had a line on something heaven.